I cross to order the Transportation Finance Committee meeting. We only have one bill on our agenda. Representative Magnus moves approval of the minutes from the March 15th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. The next item on our agenda is Senate File 4. Representative Magnus.
Madam Chair, I'd like to, and committee members, I'd like to move Senate File 4 to be heard today.
Thank you very much. Representative Davis, welcome to the committee. You and I talked earlier and decided that we'd start this hearing with a little story. I have a prop in front of me today, a button that some of us wore during the Ventura administration following a very fiery speech on the House floor, and Representative Davis is going to tell us all about it.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. That fiery speech would have been from me, but now you see a kinder, gentler Greg Davis. But what that referred to was they tried a maneuver. I don't know if some of you were here, most of you were here. They tried a maneuver on the House floor to pull a unicameral bill out of committee that had died on a 5-5 tie. So I gave the speech on 5-5, you die. That's the way it works around here, baby. And I may come to eat those words when I see a committee of 10 people that's pretty evenly split. That is in the Historical Society, by the way, and it was quite interesting.
Well,
hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Representative Davis, we're going to do what we can today to make sure that you don't end up eating your words on your 5-5, you die speech. Representative Larson.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Davis, as an effort to get your bill out of the committee, would you be open to a unicameral amendment to your bill?
Representative Davis.
Madam Chair and Representative Larson, whatever it takes. It's looking much better.
Hopefully we don't get to that. Representative Davis, if you'd explain your bill to us, please.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. And I think it's very fitting that today in the news, as you woke up and listened to public radio or your local radio station or read the papers, we hit record high gas prices for the country today. We're at $54 a barrel. The gas prices are average over $2 per gallon. And as our good governor, Governor Pawlenty, said yesterday in his speech to a group of corn farmers and ethanol producers, he said we must have a declaration of independence. And what that was in reference to is a declaration of independence from foreign oil. What this bill does is it puts us on a very good track to lessen our dependence on foreign oil. This bill, if passed, will be good for the environment, and we'll bring up how I can make that statement. It's certainly good for rural Minnesota. I'm very fortunate to have an ethanol plant called Procorn in Preston, less than a half mile from my house. And what that has done for the economy of Fillmore County, it's just simply been phenomenal, and they're a wonderful corporate citizen, and they do a great job for us. What does the bill do and what doesn't it do? First of all, I'd like to go through what the bill does. We've heard many stories and you've received much information. It's been misleading to outright false. And that's hopefully what this hearing today can do, is clear up some of those things that you've been getting. And I really would appreciate if you have any concerns about what we're doing in what we're doing with this bill and in the ethanol industry. I'd certainly like to have a chance to clear up some of the questions that you may have, because I believe this bill does clear up many problems for some of the people that had concerns about it. But what does the bill do at this point? Senate File 4 says that we will get to a 20% level of ethanol usage. Now, there's several ways we can do that. The first way would be is if we increase the usage of E5 so that the average use of ethanol is 20%, then we never go to this E10. Because we'll be at the 20% usage for ethanol, and we'll have the E10 and we'll have the E85. You average it out, it's 20% or greater. By December 31st of 2010, then we just keep going like we're going. That's the way we do it. We've got other bills out there. Other representatives have. I had a bill heard this morning that would appropriate money to increase the E85 locations across the entire state, the metro and the rural areas. So that's one way we can attain the goal of this bill. The other way is if by December 31st, 2010, we did not meet the 20% average, then a mandate would kick in by January 1st of 2015. And just so members of this committee are aware, originally I believe it was 2013. Is that right, Mr. Williams? And we changed it.
Mr. Chairman, it was 2012, and it was amended in the Transportation Policy Committee
to 2015.
Okay. Thank you. I was thinking 2013 was 2012. Now the bill reads January 1st of 2015, so that's been extended a bit, and that's the bill that we have before us today in that area. Now, one of the biggest concerns that I've had is when I was first starting to work on this bill, I thought, okay, now what happens if we go to E20 and all of a sudden all the warranties out there are invalid? That was a huge concern of mine. We took care of that in the bill by saying that the EPA has to approve E20 as a fuel. They have to do their studies to make sure that would happen. There's also the possibility that some of the auto manufacturers are looking at just warranting all the E20s before Congress says they have to, before Congress takes action this summer on the energy bill. So I believe we've addressed that. Now, just a little history here. In the Senate, this bill went through very quickly through a committee, went to the House floor. It had to go to another committee, came back to the Senate floor, I should say, and it passed other 54 to 12. So that's just, not that we care about what the Senate's doing, but in this case, I kind of do. So with that being said, we have Senate file 4 over here at this point. It's already passed the Senate, as I said, 54 to 12. And normally the Senate is supposed to be the deliberative body that sits there and we do stuff, we react quickly, we do things quickly, and then we send over to the Senate so they can actually think about it and be the deliberative body. This is kind of a reverse role for the House this time because the Senate passes so quickly, and I believe that a lot of the concerns, that some very legitimate concerns from refiners, retailers, auto dealers, auto manufacturers, I think some of these things had to be addressed. And my door has been open as we've taken the tour of the legislature to those groups to see if we can help out. And I think today some more of their concerns will be taken care of. So that's very simply the bill. The EPA has to approve E20 today. You'll hear that E20 is an illegal fuel. That's a correct statement. I like to say the word illegal seems harsh, but it is correct. You can't use E20 today. It's not approved by the EPA. And so there is the provision in the bill, and it's on page someplace here, that says that the EPA does have to approve it and make it a legal fuel. We can't be out there selling illegal fuels, but hopefully the energy bill will take care of some of that. It says on a very important provision, probably the most important provision in my mind, this bill is on page 3, line 23 and 24, obtaining federal approval for the use of E20 as a gasoline. And they're not just going to do that without study looking at the facts on how this can work. So we also have a situation, as I said, where the auto manufacturers will decide to warranty that, and then it becomes a free market competitive situation where if one does it, the others will do it to keep up. But that hasn't happened yet. That could happen. So with that, that's the bill. I would open it up for questions or testimony, however the chair wants to handle it. And we'll go from here.
Thank you, Representative David. We allow 20 minutes for the support testimony, so you've got about 15 minutes left. I see that you have 4 testifiers that you wanted to speak in favor of this bill. You can work with your testifiers on how you want to allot that time to them. We want to pay particular attention in this committee to effect on vehicles, revenue to the transportation funding sources, and the state fleet and its effect on that as well. So with that parameter, if you will bring your testifiers forward, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to bring up Mr. Rod Jorgensen first from the Minnesota Ethanol Coalition. He's an actual farmer, a real farmer that's here from southeast Minnesota. And while he gives his testimony, I'm going to go check in on a committee where I've got some other things going on very briefly. And I'll leave it in the good hands of Mr. Jorgensen.
And we promise we won't vote before you get back.
Well, I'll come back and everybody's gone. I had a nightmare about that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Davis. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name's Rod Jorgensen. I farm near Cassin. And am one of the 350 members of the Elkhorn Clean Fuel Ethanol Plant. I also serve as president of the Minnesota Coalition for Ethanol, which represents 7 of the producing plants in Minnesota. On behalf of the ethanol plants and the farmer members, we ask that you pass Representative David's bill, Senate File 4, and allow it to move to the House floor. While I think it's obvious to you why farmers support this legislation, let me touch on a few reasons why this legislation is good for consumers too, namely your constituents. First, E20 will foster will continue to foster the growth of jobs throughout the state. That impact will happen in rural Minnesota where the plants are located, but the businesses in the metropolitan regions of the state will also benefit from the services they provide to our plants. This is a growing industry that will continue to add jobs in the state and add taxpayers to the rolls. Investors, which are mostly farmers, will contribute even more to the tax base of their local governments and will pay taxes to the state. Second, ethanol has helped clean up the air that we breathe, and it will continue to do so. Thirdly, ethanol extends the already tight supply of gasoline and refining capacity that we have. Can you imagine what the price of gasoline would be today if ethanol was not a part of our gasoline blends? We keep hearing of gasoline prices continuing to climb, some saying it will reach $2.50 by this summer. When you consider the price of gasoline to ethanol, the more ethanol, the cheaper the fuel should be. Many of you have heard or will hear objections as to why this legislation won't work and it's bad policy. They tell you that the fuel has never been tested, yet some of the same car manufacturers that supply cars to Minnesota also do in Brazil, where there is either up to a 22% up to 100% ethanol blend. They then might argue that ethanol is too costly to produce, citing data that was done years ago and is hardly relevant today. The most recent government studies cite that ethanol as having a large positive energy balance. For every 1 BTU of energy in, we get 1.67 BTUs out. That includes the cost to produce corn, haul the corn, refine it, and ship the ethanol to the pump. How about car warranties? Logic tells me that if 10% blends didn't harm the components in my car, adding on another 10% won't either. That's the conclusion of the research done at Minnesota State University at Mankato. Yet with all that said, the bill includes language that gives manufacturers several years to get the warranty issues resolved. Be reminded too that for those that are concerned about blending in their small engines, the non-oxygenated premium still remains. Finally, let me tell you why this industry is so important to farmers and our rural communities. Over $500 million of output has resulted from ethanol plants, creating thousands of good-paying jobs, mainly in rural Minnesota. Farmer investors have benefited too. Our corn prices have increased because of the value added we have received processing corn into ethanol and distiller's grains. And don't forget, all corn producers who sell corn have benefited from ethanol plants, even if they are not investors. Corn bids around ethanol plants have increased as the plants continue to use more corn. I believe that the opportunities farmers have had because of ethanol have given young farmers an incentive to keep doing something that they love. I know that's the case with me. After attending the University of Minnesota and coming back to our family farm, I quickly realized that if our farming operation was to continue as is, many years our operation would just squeak by, returning a meager profit. I started to look at ways to make that life better, and to be honest, there weren't a lot of choices out there. However, 10 years ago, this fledgling industry was one that offered hope to me and the generations of other farm families. I guess that's why we're so passionate about ethanol. We've seen what it's done for our farms and our communities, and we don't mind sharing that success with others in Minnesota. That's why we want to continue to see the industry prosper. This legislation helps our farmers, our communities, and our state prosper, and that's all something that we can support. Once again, thank you for keeping Minnesota the leader in renewable fuels.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Representative Davis, you've got about 8 minutes left, and again, the testimony before the committee today is on effects on transportation systems.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to bring down Warren Formal from the Minnesota Corn Growers.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Warren Formo. I'm with the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here to speak in support of this legislation. I'll be very brief to allow some of the others to speak. Mr. Jorgensen has already gone over many of the important impacts of the ethanol industry in our state, but I would like to refer to a couple of specific instances. Fuel is a very important part of our economy, and it allows us to do a lot of other things when we have affordable energy available. Just today in the Star Tribune, the folks at Northwest Airlines, an important industry in this state, were quoted as saying that for every penny increase in the cost of a gallon of fuel, it raises their costs $1.6 million a month. Now, that's the impact of fuel costs on one industry, one company. But I would argue that our entire state's economy is subject to being slowed down by the impacts of these rising fuel prices. And there is something we can do about it. This legislation would allow us to use the resources we have to meet the resources or to meet the needs that we have here in our own state. And we think that that's very important. So I will be available for questions following, but you have other people who need to testify that I would like to let you get to, so I'll end my comments there.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to, at this point, bring up Mr. Doug Peterson, President of the Minnesota Farmers Union.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson, if you'll state your name for the record, please.
Doug Peterson, President of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll be very brief. Yesterday at the state capitol of the Great Hall, I wanted to talk to people, basically farmers, and then to legislators on this issue of ethanol. We've seen it before in 1996. Many of the representatives were there. I can see Mr. Earhart, Mr. Leader, Representative Alice Hausman. But this is really about the courage to go forward with a vision on renewable fuels. And the consequence of not going forward, I think, is detrimental to the freedom of this country. This is important for rural Minnesota, but not only that, it is important for the country. We've led before on things, and I think Minnesota can step forward and lead again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could bring up Mr. Chris Raddatz from the Minnesota Farm Bureau, and I think we'll be right on time here.
Thank you very much. So it actually might be early.
I've got two comments.
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. Our President, Al Christofferson, would have liked to have been here today, but he's in Washington, D.C. I talked to him this morning, and he again referenced the work that's being done in Washington on renewable fuels. The renewable fuel standard, directly to some of your questions you raised, Madam Chair, in Congress last year, there was fixes made to the Highway Trust Fund to address those concerns on how the tax credits for renewable fuels were paid. So we've been working long and hard on a national level to address that situation. We know there's no guarantees into the future, but we feel great that that fix did occur. I guess the other thing, too, that I would comment is the importance of the foreign oil issue and the cost that we're seeing. And we think this bill can move us in the right direction. Farm Bureau fully supports it. Probably the number one issue for our members as we talk to them. So we encourage the committee to pass this legislation. Thank you.
I think, Mr. Raddatz, that point, on average, what, how much cheaper is E10 than regular fuel?
Madam Chair, that varies because I know I work in Eagan, and there's a gas station there where there's maybe a nickel difference. I drive throughout Minnesota, and I can see a 25 and 30 cent difference per gallon between E85 and regular unleaded gasoline, so it varies.
Mr. Raddatz, my question was the E10 versus regular. Representative Davis.
Madam Chair, if I could answer. I've got a note here from Mr. Ralph Groschen from the Department of Agriculture. And their numbers are 10% blend is 8 cents less than gas without ethanol, 8 cents.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers in favor of the bill? Representative Bornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Jorgensen. I thought of all the testifiers who might be best able to answer my question, which deals with actual plants, ethanol plants, production plants. And I very much appreciate your testimony, and I want to see this industry succeed. I think it's very good for our rural economy, and it's generally good for the environment. My main problem right now is the emergence of coal to fire plants. And I understand, you know, we have plants in Winnebago and Little Falls that use biomass. And my question to you, Mr. Jorgensen, is to what extent do you think this is now going to be a trend in ethanol that we're going to start to see coal instead of natural gas or even biomass?
Mr. Jorgensen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when I look at the plants that are in construction now, the plant you're referring to is going through the permitting process now. The three newest plants that are under construction are not of that makeup. When you look at the, I'm not sure what percentage of plants are utilizing coal nationwide, but for Minnesota, that would be one out of 13 plus 4, 17. So it would be a small percentage of the plants that would utilize that. Much beyond that, I don't know what, if I could tell you what each individual's investors are thinking when they're talking about building a plant. But I would say that that's not going to be the norm.
Madam
Chair, quickly, I appreciate that because I'm looking at the December issue of ethanol today, and it has a whole feature about coal plants and potentially being the wave of the future because of high natural gas prices. Would you or even the author be at least open to, as this bill possibly moves forward, looking at a moratorium on future coal plants or even some incentives to promote biomass? What I like about biomass is, that's our homegrown economy here. I mean, we farmers may get a twofer. You can raise the biomass and use it to fuel the plant right in your own community as opposed to hauling in strip mine coal from, Wyoming, and then that money leaves the state and goes to some conglomerate who knows where.
Sure.
So, I mean, would you be open to this kind of approach as we move into the future with plants? And we can set aside the Heron Lake plant for a minute and look even beyond that at how we're going to be getting energy for these ethanol plants in the future.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Orenson. We've talked about some of this previously, and I'd certainly be open to looking at the biomass and the other. The reason the coal has come up here is because when you do the numbers and you look at what natural gas has done, I think we need to move away from natural gas for these. And if there's other biomass, I'm certainly more than willing to look at that because I've been a big supporter of wind and turkey litter, whatever the issue may be. But
tires.
actually, one reason I'm so excited about the coal and think this might actually work in Heron Lake is because after I went through 2004 with tires, coal seems very reasonable to me. But I really think that we need to allow with the fluidized bed process they're looking at with this coal. I think you'll see some of the emission numbers possibly less than natural gas. And I think I don't want to just sit here and say I'm not going to look at coal, but I do want to say that I do want to look at other biomass options. But I think coal does need to be looked at, and it's going through the process right now. I think we need to let the MPCA and all the different groups that are looking at this do their work, and I don't want to close coal out before I see some numbers on emissions and some things like that, but I am very open to the other biomass. I think anything we can do homegrown, whether it be fodder or corn side, whatever it might be, I want to look at that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Everhart.
Thinking a little bit ahead, what happens when the conflict between feeding people and fattening beef and so forth, if we get so dependent on corn as a fuel in the manner that we're talking about here, what happens at that juncture? Because it certainly will come, maybe not in your lifetime or mine, but soon.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Earhart. This is a case where we can have our corn and eat it too. And what I mean by that is when you look at the process, the ethanol process, it takes the sugars out of the corn, and what you're left with is something called the DDG. Now, in southwestern Minnesota, there's a company called Dakota Gold that markets the DDGs to feed to the cattle, to feed to the hogs, to feed to the poultry, to feed to a lot of dairy farmers use it. The sad thing about this is right now we're shipping a lot of the DDGs up to California, Idaho, Arizona, Texas, where the cows are going. I think that we need to increase our livestock production in Minnesota and keep the DDGs here. So we have the protein that's left from the corn, so we get the energy from the ethanol, and yet we still have a product we can use to feed our cattle. So really with ethanol, you have the best of both worlds.
I mean,
Representative Earhart.
Is that also fit for human consumption?
Representative Davis.
I need some help on that. I know that you can feed it to livestock, and then you know you get to the human consumption that way. I don't know of the testing that's being done on DDGs for human consumption. I think, there is some human consumption with it in that when you have the Benson plant making Shaker's vodka, I mean, that's very much consumed by humans and has great energy value in it. Maybe if I could bring up the Mr.
You're treading on us a pretty thin ice.
That was not good.
No.
5-5, you're done.
Yeah.
But if I could have Mr. Lee come up from the Benson plant to answer the question specifically on human consumption of DDGs, I need to know that.
That would be great. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
My name is Bill Lee. I'm the general manager of Chippewa Valley Ethanol Company. Madam Chair, I can answer the question. Technically speaking, yes, DDGs could be made for human consumption. There are some people who have some interest in doing that. It's not necessarily the best application. I think we'd probably favor it as a feed to animals and certainly for human consumption.
Right.
And if I may, I'd also like to come back to Representative Hornstein's concern, and I'm not sure that the committee really appreciates the level of interest in working in the cellulosic conversion area, but I know our plant, our largest R&D expenditure in our plant now is trying to figure out how to take fibrous components out of our distiller's grains, turn those into energy through gasification, and combine that with crop residues like corn stover so we can displace natural gas. And at the same time, increase the protein value of our distiller's grains and make it more valuable.
And Madam
thank
Chair,
you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, I took a tour a couple weeks ago. I went out to Bingham Lake, where there's a plant, Heron Lake, where they want to build a plant. Then I went to Brewster with a soybean plant. But there are some plants, and maybe you can help me a little bit on this, Mr. Lee, some plants are looking at another process to put the DDGs through, and what do we come up with then? I forgot something.
Certainly.
Madam Chair, there's a very active array of new technology development in ethanol plants. I think some of the plants are working on improving their efficiencies through some new conversion processes, new products, new feedstocks. It's a very active area. All the Minnesota plants, I think, are engaged at some level in trying to advance their level of technology.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein?
Just, Madam Chair, quickly to that point, I mean, and I'm encouraged to hear that. That's very helpful. You know, ethanol has a good brand, clean air and renewable. And, to continue on, biomass is renewable. Coal is not. And I think my concern is that you move backwards in a number of ways, you know, from this brand by, you know, embracing coal. So to the extent that we can move forward with the kinds of things that you're talking about, which I think are very competitive with coal and natural gas, that would be helpful to me and I think many others who are looking at this, you know, positively but with concern, because we don't want to backtrack on that excellent brand that you've created.
Representative Davis.
To that point, I was talking to some folks from the coal industry, and they told me that coal is renewable, it just takes a little longer.
Thank you. So very briefly, we need to move on to the next set of our meeting.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I appreciate your support. I've been personally involved with the Governor's Ethanol Coalition in trying to help craft some R&D funding for cellulosic conversions and some production incentives for just those things. And Minnesota still has abundant raw materials in this area that are untapped and can provide a lot of value if we can figure out how to use them.
Thank you. And next we'll have Ms. Niren, who is testifying with some concerns on the bill. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sandy Niren. I'm here on behalf of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. The Alliance is a trade association of 9 of the world's largest car and light truck manufacturers. In Minnesota alone, car manufacturers are responsible for over 111,000 jobs, including the 2,000 high-paying jobs at the Ford plant here in St. Paul. They are also the biggest property taxpayer in the city of St. Paul. In fact, 1 out of every 10 private sector jobs in the entire United States are related to new car vehicle manufacturing and sales. We are not here as an opponent of ethanol today, but I am here to raise some concerns about the methods in this bill in order to get us to this goal. The first thing I want to mention briefly is the car manufacturing industry is very, very involved in doing research and development on a number of different avenues of improved and advanced renewable technologies. Included in your brochures today, I think, is this piece put together by the manufacturers. It describes a number of alternative technologies that they are presently spending about $20 billion a year doing research and development on so they can bring some of these new technologies to market. Fuel cells, hydrogen cells, hybrids, a number of different technologies. Ethanol is one of those alternative technologies that the car manufacturers are greatly increasing their production of. Just a brief background. Car manufacturers currently make two different kinds of vehicles. Most vehicles are warrantied for 10% ethanol. Every manufacturer in the world does warranty their cars for 10% ethanol. And they started doing this over 20 years ago, long before Minnesota ever considered imposing a 10% ethanol mandate. And they did it because of federal requirements. So every car is warrantied. There isn't a manufacturer that doesn't warranty their cars for at least 10% ethanol. Also, about 20 years ago, a number of manufacturers started making cars that are called flexible fuel vehicles. They run on up to 85% ethanol. These cars are mainly made by American manufacturers. Ford, General Motors, Daimler, Chrysler make these vehicles. I have a brochure that describes a fair number of them that are currently in the market. Chrysler Sebring Sedan, Dodge Ram, Dodge Caravan, Ford Taurus, Ford Explorer Sport Track, Mercedes-Benz, Mercury Sable, Mercury Mountaineer, Chevy Suburban, Chevy Silverados, Chevy Avalanches, Chevy Tahoes. Ford has...
Suburban has an 85? Is it the 85?
Yeah, these are E85 vehicles.
Cool.
Ford has just told me that they're coming out with a F-150 truck next year that will be an E85 vehicle. So these are increasing in use every single year. Ford is a strong supporter of the E85 efforts. Minnesota is a model state for E85 infrastructure support. There are groups here that work quite strongly to get pumps out into the available for people to buy these. There's only 200 and some pumps in the entire United States that dispense E85 fuel, and Minnesota has over half of those here. So we are a model state for this and would encourage the committee to build on that great effort that's already here. 10% of the Ford fleet already that's in Minnesota are flexible fuel vehicles. So this industry is doing very, very well here. Next thing I would just briefly mention here is obviously we need to talk about warranties, and that's the main reason that the car manufacturers are involved in this debate. Included in your packet is some letters that the Alliance and Ford Motor Company sent to the governor last fall in response to his request to extend warranties to cars for E20. Car manufacturers explain in that letter that based upon the way that car manufacturers currently produce cars here in the United States, they are not able to extend warranties to E20 at this time. The reason for that is we've never tested E20 with U.S. emission standards. Never tested it before. As Representative Davids indicated earlier, E20 is an illegal gas at this point. Part of this legislation would require that the state or the producers apply for a waiver from the U.S. EPA before we could even be permitted to sell E20 in Minnesota. So that needs to all be, that's one of the main reasons we are not able to warranty it. We have not tested it. We don't know what it will do. A few people have mentioned Brazil, and so let me briefly mention that. There is also a handout that was given to you that is a letter from an engineer at Ford Motor Company. It's dated February 8th, and it's addressed to the Honorable Gregory Davids.
Members, it's near the back of your packet of materials. It looks like this.
And in this handout, the engineer from Ford mentions that there is a significant difference in the situation between United States cars and the way cars are manufactured in Brazil. Brazil, as a national policy, moved its entire fuel supply from gasoline to ethanol, 22% ethanol blends. When they started to introduce ethanol about 25 years ago, Brazil had absolutely no emission standards for automobiles whatsoever. While the United States started emission standards in 1966, Brazil didn't have their first emission standard until 1989. So with no emission standards, you're talking about quite a significantly different vehicle than we're talking about being manufactured here. In addition to that, what Brazil did is they went to a specific blend of E22. All cars were calibrated to exactly that fuel content and no other. Minnesota vehicles and all other vehicles in the United States that are produced here that can take ethanol have a range of fuel that they can take. So if you have an E85 vehicle here in Minnesota, it can take 0% ethanol, it can take 10% ethanol, and everything up to 85% ethanol. This is not true with the vehicles that are produced in Brazil. They take that; they are calibrated to that one specific gasoline and that specific gasoline only. They cannot take anything different. So what is required from the manufacturers in Brazil is significantly different than anything that we deal with here in the United States. It's a very, very different vehicle. A couple other concerns I want to address real briefly. All manufacturers, and there are 9 that I represent, will have to make different changes to their vehicles in order to comply with E20 mandate if Minnesota passes this. Some manufacturers will have to make minor changes. Some have indicated that it will cost them approximately $300 a car in order to make the changes to the sensors, to the calibration, to certain parts that come in contact with the alcohol in order for them to feel comfortable warranting these cars. So there will be significant costs. Minnesota is the only state in the country that currently has even an E10 mandate. Nobody, to my knowledge, is even considering legislation to do E20. So we would be requesting manufacturers to manufacture cars just for Minnesota, 1.5% of the entire U.S. market. Either they'll have to make a special car for Minnesota, or they will have to retrofit every manufacturing plant in the entire United States in order to meet a Minnesota mandate. I'm sure many of you know Minnesota is unique in having such a wonderful corn industry and corn products here. Not every state does. Not every state is the least bit interested in ever imposing such mandates on vehicles in their state and would never be able to come close to producing enough product to meet those kinds of mandates. So we are talking about a Minnesota-only, possibly several other states who might be interested in even imposing this kind of mandate. The timelines that are currently in the bill don't work very well, and we will be suggesting hopefully an amendment later that will address some of our concerns with the timelines of the EPA approval process and when the manufacturers would be required to bring cars online to meet that. One other issue that also is of concern to us that's not addressed in this bill, and that's current cars that are on the road. Even if manufacturers change the way they make cars prospectively, all of you and all of your constituents are going to own cars that will not be capable of taking E20 gas or will not be warranted for E20 gas. So if E10 pumps are not maintained in some way on a phase-out basis for cars that are currently on the road, all warranties in those cars that are already there will be voided. And even those people whose warranties have expired may see some damage to their vehicles that they'll have to pay for out of their own pocket. Another issue is under current law there are a number of vehicles, on-road vehicles, equipment, snowmobiles, motorcycles that are exempt from having to put E10 in their cars. And under this bill they would also be exempt from having to put E20 in. But there are concerns about the availability of this product, and I know there will be others who will be coming up to testify who will talk about that. Then the last point I wanted to make, and the manufacturers I represent, there's only 3 of them that even make any ethanol vehicles currently that go up to E85. 6 of them do not, but they do other alternative technologies that they've invested billions of dollars in. Toyota, a number of the others have been very, very active in manufacturing hybrid vehicles. So there is some concern here that those who have invested all this money in hybrids and other alternative technologies are now going to be asked to start over and go back to ethanol just to satisfy Minnesota's statutory requirements. So they are going to be starting from scratch. And there is some concern from some of those manufacturers that they've done good things with alternative technologies. It just hasn't been the one that Minnesota is interested in, and will be very costly to them. So those are my concerns. I'll be glad to answer any questions if anybody has any.
All right, thank you. I think what we'll do next is move on to Mr. McNew from the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute, and we'll ask questions following his testimony. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McNew. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
James McNew. I'm with the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute. And I want to say good afternoon, Madam Chair and representatives. On behalf of the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute and the manufacturers in which we represent, I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify before this committee concerning this bill. The OPI represents over 80 manufacturers of outdoor power equipment or providers of components or services to the industry. This includes Minnesota-based companies such as Toro, Polaris, and Articat. The prevalent misconception is that current products will operate the same on 20% ethanol as on current general-purpose fuels up to 10% ethanol. Unfortunately, in the small off-road engine case, this is not the truth. Most, if not all, small off-road products will require changes to the carburetor design and calibration to accommodate the differences in the fuel properties and corrosive effects. Fuel tank and fuel delivery systems will need to be tested and reevaluated for compatibility with the higher ethanol content. This would also include fuel caps, gaskets, seals, and diaphragms within the carburetors. Some of our OPI members have experience with building products for use with higher ethanol content fuels in Brazil, such as the E22 that's been mentioned. It can be done. Products can be built that way. These Brazilian products, though similar to the U.S. product, as was just testified concerning the automotive, is substantially different in carburetor design and calibration and some component design to compensate for the increased ethanol content. Based on this experience in Brazil, it is evident that the current product designs that would not be compatible with E20 fuels, and a state-specific design would be required for Minnesota if the 20% ethanol mandate is implemented. Today's outdoor power equipment is designed and calibrated to operate on 0 to 10% ethanol fuels. And to meet the federal emissions limits, the calibration and certification is done in accordance to the federal law using the EPA certification fuels. With the exception of California, regulated products, all small off-road products under 19 kilowatts or approximately 25 horsepower, are required to set their operating parameters according to the EPA regulation. This requirement, in effect, eliminates the option of calibrating the products to operate correctly on 20% ethanol. In addition, tamper-resistant adjustment limiters are installed to maintain product calibration to these federal emission limits, which, by the way, is against federal law to be tampered with. In reference to some earlier testimony, the perception of ethanol as being good for the environment is also relative to the ratio in which the ethanol is applied in the fuel. According to some SAE studies for ethanols in fuels, the ethanol content continues to rise until approximately 30% content. So between 0 to approximately 30% with the maximum amount of effect on permeation barriers falls between 20% and 25% content. Since this industry, our industry, has been recently affected by evaporative emission reductions and regulations through California, and is currently in process of review with EPA on that same issue, this becomes a very important factor in what we need to be looking at here. Another regulatory consequence to consider is if the E20 mandate does force the need for a state-specific product designed to meet the EPA regulations and also operate on E20 fuel, this would violate the intent of the federal law by forcing a third product design for the Minnesota market. The Clean Air Act amendments prevents individual states from requiring a state-specific machine in order to meet the federal emission limits. But the most critical concern that the outdoor power equipment industry has with the E20 mandate is with the existing products that are designed for operation with today's fuels that will still be in the hands of Minnesota citizens when this mandate becomes effective. Basically, today's small off-road engine is calibrated to a very lean air-to-fuel ratio as required by EPA and will operate as intended on fuels containing up to 10% maximum ethanol. Further enlargement of the air-to-fuel ratio, which is a result of additional ethanol content, adding oxygen to the fuel, would increase the operating temperature of the engine, increase exhaust temperature, increase idle speed and operating speed, and reduce engine life expectancy. The U.S. Forest Service has already established exhaust gas temperature limits. The International Standards Organizations and American National Standards Institute have established product standards that establish the surface temperatures, cutting device stopping times, blade speeds, and such. Protective guarding and structural requirements. All of these standards were established to mitigate hazards that can be expected to occur when the existing designed product is operated on E20 fuel. So whether it is incompatibility of materials that would create potential fuel leaks or failures, or incompatibility with standards that were intended to mitigate hazards by operating at temperatures above design parameters and creating heat-related failures, it is important to fully understand the effects of an E20 mandate on existing off-road products that are in the hands of Minnesota citizens. You should also be aware of the likelihood of reduced product availability. The complexities and cost of managing state-specific product distribution will likely cause manufacturers to limit the available product offerings. This may also be driven by issues of incompatibility with E20 fuels, resulting in decisions based on warranty costs or hazard exposure or regulatory conflicts with EPA requirements. California has experienced these reductions in products due to their state-specific requirements. So Minnesota could expect similar results. So for all the reasons and concerns presented, the OPI, on behalf of the outdoor power equipment industry, and out of concern for the citizens of Minnesota, request that this committee amend House Bill to provide the needed safeguards to assure the citizens of Minnesota are, one, not subjected to a change in fuel requirements without a demonstration of compatibility for small off-road products through actual testing of current EPA Phase 1 and Phase 2 products. That Minnesota citizens are not subjected to unreasonable risk of injury resulting from operating temperature increases, operational or functional failures of safety devices and guarding, or material compatibility with E20 fuels. And we ask to seek a CPSC advisory opinion on this. And Minnesota citizens are not subjected to restricted or eliminated product offerings from regulatory restrictions and emission limits or by requiring a third machine or state-specific product. We ask that you seek EPA regulatory review and determination on compliance with Federal Clean Air Act. These amendments were submitted yesterday morning by William Gary, counsel for the OPEI. I want to say again thank you for this opportunity allowing the OPI to address the committee concerning this mandate in Minnesota.
Thank you very much for your comments, Mr. McNeil. Are there any questions for Mr. McNeil? All right, were there any questions for Ms. Niren? All right, then we'll move on to the next portion of our testimony. We have asked Mr. Timothy Morris, the Director of the Travel Management Division of the Department of Administration, to provide us some information about the state fleet. You have quite a title there, sir. Welcome to the committee, so state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Tim Morris. I work for the Department of Administration.
All right, thank you. We've asked Mr. Morris to bring some figures before the committee. There's a handout in your packet that looks like this that has some figures that he's provided for the number of cars, how many of them are in different categories, percentage of E85, fuel consumption, et cetera, and he's going to make a presentation to the committee. Welcome.
Thank you. Instead of the big title, you can just think of me as the fleet guy.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting me. I'd like to talk about moving away from petroleum fuel from a fleet management perspective. From the fleet management perspective, it's very sound to move away from dependence on petroleum. This bill points the way to move away from petroleum. It is the direction of the state of Minnesota to do that, with or without the bill. There is an executive order that was issued at the end of last year that points the state of Minnesota fleet in the direction that we're heading, which reduces the dependence on petroleum. Our goals set out for 2010 and 2015. The goal for gasoline is to reduce by 25% in 2010 and by 50% in 2015. For diesel fuel, it's for diesel fuel, the goal is 10% in 2010 and 25% in 2015. The tools that we have available to do that, some of the tools that we have available are a reduction in the number of vehicles in the fleet, increasing the fuel efficiency of the fleet, displacing petroleum fuel with biofuels, including ethanol and biodiesel, and increasing the use of communication technology in place of travel. The state is planning to track progress as agencies move toward meeting the goals, and it's the intent of the state to be in a leadership position. I would be happy to answer any questions that anyone has about what the state is doing with E85.
Right, certainly. I have a couple of questions to start out with. These numbers, do they include all state agencies, DNR, Tell me who's in and out of these numbers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The numbers include agencies at the cabinet level. The numbers do not include some large chunks, particularly NINSCU is not included. The University of Minnesota is not included. But all cabinet level agencies, including DNR.
Okay, and so the State Patrol as well?
That's correct.
And Met Council would not be included, is that correct?
Met Council was included in the numbers.
Okay.
And not the buses, but the light-duty vehicles that they operate.
All right. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, in other words, if nothing changed in current law, by the year 2015, we would have that 2,000% increase? Am I reading this correctly? On gallons of E85?
Mr. Morris.
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, the state has a significant number of flex fuel vehicles that operate on E85. We are planning to increase the use of E85 by state agencies to displace the gasoline that's used.
And Representative Hausman, it's an executive order. It's not a mandate. I mean, if you'll look in the column that talks about the percentage of the vehicle that uses flex fuel and the actual, it has the ability to use flex fuel and the percentage that's actually using it, you go from 55% to only 5% fuel use. And while certainly it probably would not be reasonable to expect an even percentage of both, given that there's not E85 pumps at every corner, if you will, I think that it's something at least the committee should look at, that if in fact this administration wants to put a mandate on the residents of the state of Minnesota, but in my opinion it's probably has some room for improvement, if you will, in their own use of E85 relative to the number of E85 vehicles that they have. I think that's something the committee can consider. Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Morris, looking at your statistics, it shows that the sport utility vehicles, which you say there's 309 in the fleet right now, am I missing something? Are they are they not using any E85 or I'm not catching all of them.
And members, if you will, Ms. Nairn, I think, testified to the flex fuel vehicles that are currently available, and on the back of this sheet is listed on the various vehicles that are available. I think Representative Anderson wants to maybe know why we have zero sports utility vehicles in the fleet that are E85.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, when this information was gathered, that's correct. There were none. The sport utility vehicles have recently popped up as becoming E85 compatible, and agencies are acquiring them and using E85 in them now.
Okay.
And members, I believe these numbers are from 2003 fleet numbers. Is that correct, Mr. Morris?
Okay.
Right. The sheet was, that is correct, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Do you know from your own information updated, do we see a substantially higher percentage of E85 use or vehicles from updated information that you might have?
Madam Chair, committee members, we'll be tracking that on an ongoing basis, and traditionally, if we look over the past few years, the percentage of E85 vehicles in the state fleet has been increasing. It will be helpful as light trucks become available. A significant part of the state fleet is light trucks, work vehicles. As they become more available in flex fuel, that will be a significant improvement for us. We'll be able to include those as well.
And can you tell me what percentage of the vehicles do you purchase new or turn over each year on average?
Madam Chair, committee members, Travel Management is responsible for providing a number of vehicles to a lot of agencies. I can't speak for the entire fleet. There are some sections that provide their own MnDOT and DNR are two notable examples. But typically in an automobile, it would be 3 to 7 years, depending on what type of use the vehicle is put in. And if we go into the light truck area, it might be 4 to 12.
Okay. And then you mentioned that you don't do the buying for MnDOT and DNR, but do you put out to bid to certain manufacturers for certain cars, and then the state has to go under a state purchasing contract, or how does that work?
The Department of Administration, which I work for, has a section called the Material Management Division, which does contracts that the state purchases. We purchase off of the material management contracts, as does DNR and MnDOT.
And would that then limit the availability of certain vehicles through that contract?
Madam Chair, there is the ability to limit. Usually it's done on a competitive basis. According to Minnesota statute, the bids are put out on a competitive basis and awarded.
So if I was in a state agency that needed a light truck, you put out a bid for light truck specifications, and then if I need to buy a light truck, I only get to pick from one make and model, or is there more flexibility than that?
Madam Chair, generally there's more flexibility than that. Generally there's contracts with different dealers around the state, and there is a choice.
And so would
would the majority then of these E85 vehicles that we see listed here be available for purchase under the state contracting standards?
Madam Chair, committee members, material management unit makes a point of having E85 vehicles available on the contracts for agencies to choose from, yes.
But have you seen this document?
Yes, I have.
I mean, is it a majority of these are available, or three or four? I mean, how easy will it be for the state to purchase E85 vehicles given the range that are available and your procurement standards?
Madam Chair, committee members, agencies inform material management what type of vehicles they need, and those are the contracts that are put in place. Typically, what we buy from the contract that are available are sedans and minivans, but pickup trucks. The state doesn't use a lot of sport utility vehicles, only a few of them. I would not anticipate that maybe all of those would be available, but there would be a sample of them that would be available.
All right. Are there additional questions for Mr. Morris today? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Morris, on the bottom of this sheet, it says the assumptions, and says E85 use is based on information from Wright Express, which contains some inaccuracy. And that's, I'm just wondering what your inaccuracy of this assumption is.
Madam Chair, committee members, the fuel data that we get comes in through the Wright Express, is the credit card company that we use.
Okay.
And the inaccuracy comes from oftentimes coding at the station where the fuel is purchased. Occasionally you go into a station, and because the E85 is not the everyday fuel that they sell, it's coded inaccurately, and that information then comes to us as something other than E85. But I feel that these numbers are fairly accurate, but I can't say that they're 100% accurate because of the coding information that we sift through.
Thank you.
Mr. Morris, I have a document here on E85 fuel usage, what's been part of the 2003 study, it may be the, and it talks about how much fuel is purchased by the department's E85 capable vehicles. And in this study assumption, it said because of a high percentage of gas station clerks classifying fuel purchases incorrectly, any purchase of fuel at a station that sells E85 was considered to be E85 for the purpose of the study. Is that same standard reflected in these numbers?
Madam Chair, no. When we did that study that you're referring to, we made the assumption that if they made it into that town and bought fuel from that vendor, they bought the right fuel. This is actual data coming in that shows the 85 purchases.
All right, thank you. Representative Magna.
Madam Chair, just for a little comment on that, we've talked about this the last couple of years in the Ag Committees, and we've talked about this specific topic and had Mr. Morris testify in front of us also, as our intent is to encourage the state, number one, to be a leader in the ethanol consumption effort. Part of the problem, Madam Chair and the members, is that in the discussion I had with the DNRs as part of this, for example, and you'll see on the map that we have in the pamphlet we have here that the DNR, approximately half the DNR fleet, for example, is housed in northern Minnesota. You can see how many stations are offering E85 for sale in Minnesota, in northern part of Minnesota. So that's a challenge we have to overcome. And Chairman Davids this morning testified with a bill he has in front of the Ag Environment Natural Resources Committee to incent petroleum industry and stations and C-stores and vendors of petroleum products to incent them to use more E85 and put E85 capacity in their stations so we don't have the big holes we have in the areas of some of the areas of the state. So my point is I'm hesitant to admonish some of these agencies when, in fact, it doesn't make any sense today for them to see it, and that's why you're seeing some of the numbers that we're seeing. I'm hopeful with the work that we're doing that Chairman Davids is doing and others to encourage more E85 facilities around the state that these numbers will continue to improve.
Well, and to that point, Representative Magnus, you'll probably really like one of the amendments we're going to consider today.
I love all of them, but some of them better than others.
All right, thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Morris, in your quotes that you get for the state, what's the differential between E85 price per gallon and normal regular gas?
Madam Chair, committee members, most of the fuel, almost all of the fuel that's purchased for the vehicles that we provide is purchased from retail stations. Yesterday, I purchased the 85, and the price was 30 cents less than gasoline. $1.96 for regular gasoline.
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Representative Davis a question.
Representative Davis.
Two questions. Representative Davis, I don't know which committee you chair, but do I have a bill in your committee? The other thing is...
I should say Chair Davis.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, it has been scheduled for a hearing.
In that,
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davis, I probably don't stop at that many stations, but I never notice the difference in... Actually, we have four prices ranges on gasoline, and I've never noticed that price range, and I'm kind of... I was aware of it, and I'm kind of, it was stated before that there was up to 30 cents. Where is that happening? Is the retailer just pocketing that, or what? It isn't passed on to the consumer, or what happens?
Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Leader. It depends on the area. The Chippewa Valley plant in Benson has been very aggressive in helping, I believe, about 30 stations put in pumps, or helping subsidize them to put in the tanks and the pumps. And they have an agreement there, and I believe it, that it has to be at least 20 cents less per gallon for E85 than others. But that's about probably 25% of the pumps in Minnesota. I don't know what arrangement other ones have, so I can't really answer that as far as that goes. But in southwestern Minnesota, Benson, Wilmer, that area, it's right in the contract that if they're going to put the pumps in and have them subsidized by the plant, that they will be 20 cents less, I believe the number is.
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Davis, I noticed in the bill it stipulates that at some time the total percentage of fuel gasoline used shall be 20%, like ethanol or whatever it is. Do you know what portion of the total gasoline volume now is sold with ethanol, basically ethanol? Is it 1 or 2% or anything or less?
Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will ask for help from someone in the audience on this. I don't know if we're, the way it is now, if we're 13 or 14%. I don't know if someone can help me with that or not.
Representative Davis, we allow phone-a-friend in this committee, so if you'd like to choose your phone-a-friend.
I will yield my seat to Mr. Ralph Groshen from the department.
All right, thank you.
Only the ethanol is great. Any officer bills it.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Groshen. If you'll state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Ralph Groshen, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. We kind of give the background. About 97% of the gasoline sold in Minnesota is blended with 10% with ethanol, so that's pretty close to 10%. The amount of ethanol that's actually sold, my understanding, is about 2.6 million gallons this past year. That was our best year. That would have a fairly small percentage impact on the 2.7 billion gallons. So I think we're probably about 9.7%.
Representative
Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I was trying to write that in the bill. It indicates if this point that there's 20% sold, then it would automatically trigger in rather than your dates. And I was just wondering how reflective that was, if that would be a later period or a earlier period. That was only my question. That's all I needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for the testifiers? All right, thank you. I think at this time then we will move forward with some of the amendments, and we'll get Mr. Ness to pass those out for us. And my understanding is that the Flint Hills and Minnesota Chamber want to testify specifically to amendments, so when we get to those, we'll go there.
Madam Chair, if I might just say one closing remark.
Sure, I'm sorry, Mr. Morris.
Not at all. It's the intent of the state to reduce dependence on petroleum fuel, which is in line with Mr. David's bill.
And we understand it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, if I could, while some things are being passed out, two points. Number one, is a little bit of history here. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, the use of ethanol came to Minnesota to meet EPA clean air requirements. What would happen is for 3 or 4 months during the winter months, they would, we came in a attainment area, and there's a 10-county area, 8 counties, Minnesota, 2 in Wisconsin, around the Twin Cities metro area, that had to go to ethanol during the winter. Now, by October 1st of 1997 is when we came in with the statewide mandate. So it was ethanol was first introduced to Minnesota to clean up the air. The second point I'd like to make, very briefly, also things being passed out, is I was in Memphis recently with my good friend, Senator Dallas Sams, about 6-7 weeks ago. And we're in Memphis. And by the way, Senator Sams is having surgery tomorrow, and I hope you can keep him in your prayers. But in Memphis, there's a building there that has a sign on it. It kind of reminds me of what we're going into with the amendments here. And it says, Al's Veterinary Service and Taxidermy. Either way, you take the dog home. So as we go through these amendments, either way, I want to take this dog home. So we'll do the best we can here.
We're with you, Chair David.
And I appreciate your help on
this. There's Mr. Jessica Chow in the audience. If you'd like to testify, you've got about 2 minutes. I'm sorry that you weren't able to contact the committee administrator ahead of time. We're going to work on amendments, so certainly come to the table if you'll state your name for the record, please.
How do you do? My name is Philip Desitel. I'm glad to be here. This is the first time in my life I've ever been involved with the government in a good manner. But,
we're glad you're here, and we hope that it continues to be a good manner.
You know, this is the Transportation Finance Committee, and I think we need the inputs from everybody here. And the one thing I haven't heard, and in all the literature I haven't read, is the fuel economy of the ethanol vehicles. Now, in 1989, I was living in Arizona, and they had a 5-month ethanol mandate for the in the populated counties, like we do. And I drove the same car through 2-4 changes, 2 on and 2 off, and I got, with a 6% ethanol, I got 4% less fuel economy. So if I apply those same standards, 20% ethanol will give every Minnesotan 13% less fuel economy. I see you waving your head. People will tell you that a fuel injector can make up the difference. But the fact is, there's only 2/3 the energy in a gallon of ethanol than there is in a gallon of gasoline. 2/3. Now, car manufacturers are doing their very best to get the very most fuel efficiency out of a car. And they have oxygen sensors, fuel sensors. They have all these sensors, and they're not wasting that percentage of energy. You're not seeing it polluted. You're burning it in the car. If this thing worked, we could put water in our gasoline, and we wouldn't get any less fuel economy.
And so just for your information, this bill has been to a number of committees, and the vast majority of our committee members on this committee are also on transportation policy. So the energy issues around the fuel have been discussed with many members on the committee. So we
the cost to every citizen in Minnesota, $50 a year minimum.
Yeah, as far as because of the lower output, the higher
economy. You're going to spend more money for your corn products. You're going to spend more money for your beef. We're polluting the water. Now, I know these aren't transportation things, but this bill is bad from every aspect. And nobody here has seen a side-by-side test of ethanol versus regular gasoline. And you could do it for under $10,000.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
If you're interested, you know, contact me. I'll tell you how to get it done for under $10,000.
All right.
And there's probably enough people out here you could raise the $10,000.
Well, and considering what some of these lobbyists don't get paid, I bet you're right. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you so much for coming down today. We appreciate that. All right, members, you have the A-10 amendment that's been passed out, and
basically what this amendment would do was would guarantee that we continue to receive the federal gas tax revenues that to make up for the portion of our fuel that is ethanol, and if that were ever to go away, then the mandate would be voided as well. Are there any questions? Is there anybody who would like to speak for or against the A-10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A-10 amendment is adopted. The next amendment that we'll consider is an amendment that Representative Anderson has. It's the A-17 amendment. This is an amendment that's supported by the Minnesota Chamber, and Mr. Qualis would like to come down and speak to that amendment. We would appreciate it.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tony Qualis, and I'm representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank Representative Anderson for bringing this amendment forward, and I'd like to thank Representative Davids and a number of members of the Minnesota Corn Growers who we've been working with to try and alleviate, fudge, I'm not sure what adjectives you want to use to come up with this agreement, come up with this language that sits before you on Senator Davids, or Representative, I'll make you a senator yet. Representative Davids' bill. As you can see, it would require a report, and I'd like to point out, I think Representative Davids and I will both agree on a change here in a second, but it requires that the Commissioner of Agriculture, in consultation with the Department of, with DEED, Employment and Economic Development, and the PCA, using existing budgetary and staff resources, so we don't want any fiscal costs to the state agencies, in coordination with the federal waiver, look at the costs and effects of what this ethanol proposal will do, and then report back to the legislature. One of the agreements that Senator or Representative Davids and I, he could probably point out that on page 1, line 4, to delete study, and also on page 1, line 24, to delete study and insert report, Madam Chair. Other than that, I stand for any questions.
All right, just that members, I'm assuming that Representative Anderson would move an oral amendment to his A-17 amendment, line 4, delete the word study, and the semicolon, line 24, delete the word study, and insert report. Representative Anderson?
Okay. So moved.
Thank you.
Do
you want that incorporated?
Yes.
All right, thank you. That's been incorporated into the A-17 amendment. Okay, I'm sorry. Representative David, did you want to speak? I'm sorry, it was Representative Powell's one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have a sense whether the Commissioner of Agriculture agrees that it can be done with existing budgetary and staff resources?
Representative Hausman, we're going to take a number of amendments today and then lay the bill on the table and ask for a fiscal note on the bill as amended before we send it out here to see if what the fiscal implications are of the measures that are being considered, so that they will have time. Also, these amendments were available in the committee office yesterday, made deadline, and the administration had every opportunity to pick up the amendments ahead of time if they had so wished. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do believe that there are some folks in the department here, and they do agree that they could do this at no extra cost.
All right, thank you for that additional information. Anybody in the audience would like to speak in favor of the amendment? Anybody in the audience like to speak in opposition to the amendment? Any additional questions by committee members on the A-17 amendment as amended? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A-17 amendment as amended has been adopted. The next amendment that's being distributed is the A-16 amendment, and in listening to the proponents of this and watching some of the legislation that's moving forward, and Representative Magnus spoke to this issue, we know that currently there's a level of funding that the state puts forth to support producer payments at the production end of ethanol. As various ethanol plants will be falling offline for those producer payments, if you will, what this amendment does is it keeps that funding level the same, and as ethanol production plants fall off of their
what I believe to be a 10-year subsidy program. And then we also make up, in recent years, we had a reduction in the credit amount, and there's a current statutory provision that backfills that reduction in the payment amount. Following that, that growing increment then would be available to provide payments to the distributors of E85 fuel to get that end of the production stream and distribution stream, if you will, up and growing to get more E85 pumps, thank you, out there to try and get these fuel uses up without having to, the mandate to go into effect. And on page...
Madam Chair, you've got a couple blanks.
Yeah, page 4. On line 36, we need to insert 50. And on line 34, we need it to insert 15,000. And that would then follow the standards brought forth by Chair Davids in his bill that would have used general fund appropriation for a similar reimbursement program. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, yeah, basically that's the bill I had this morning in Ag Finance is page 4, line 20 through, well, it doesn't go quite that much. The only comment I'd make on this is, this with the producer payments are generally handled in Ag Finance and not Transportation Finance, so I don't know how germane that is. I know in my committee there's no germaneness qualifications, so but that's my only concern about this, that this is really an Ag Finance issue and not so much Transportation Finance on the producer payment part.
Sir Davis, we're not reducing the producer payment amounts one penny. But rather, yeah, as that amount falls off, then the increment that would not be going to the ethanol producers would then go to the distributors of these fuels. Chair Abrams.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I 5 to 5, you die, Representative Davis, and it appears that this Christmas tree is going to have a lot of ornaments on it by the time it leaves. I'm just wondering about the policy, Madam Chair. I was here when the mandate was put in, when the payments were put in. And the idea was is that this would get the industry to self-sufficiency. And now we're going to have a new mandate, and now we're going to have a new subsidy program for distributors. Is there any idea that we're going to ever get to a free market in this, or are my grandchildren going to be dealing with the same $20 million for some sort of new pump or some sort of new fuel in the future?
Chair Abrams, if you make a good point, I think we're struggling to get this bill out of committee and put some equity. In the past, there hasn't been the subsidies to the distributors and their costs. They've incurred costs to put in new pumps. There are representatives from Flint Hills Refinery, if you'd like to hear from them about what they expect their additional costs to be. I was trying to provide some balance to it.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I could think of things that we do here every day that becomes a mandate on business, and they come and ask for a subsidy in order to comply. Every time we change the sales tax definitions in the state, we're asking retailers to have to make changes to their software and how they remit payments to the state. They don't get it. They don't get a subsidy. I'm trying to figure out which mandates are we putting in that deserve a subsidy to people who have to change, and which mandates are we putting in that don't deserve a subsidy?
It's a
rhetorical question, because I'll tell you, at least in the tax area that I'm most familiar with, we make changes every year that require major changes on behalf of accountancy firms, on behalf of how people do business in this state, and they have to absorb the cost of doing it. And, you know, maybe these stations are more deserving than everybody else. I don't know, but what is it exactly we're trying to subsidize here and why?
Thank you. Representative Avis.
Madam Chair, and that brings up a point also I wanted to talk about it, because if I recall Chairman David's bill this morning, yours had a set amount in the bill, Chairman David's. When we talked about it, you did mention not exceeding $15,000 and up to 50% of the cost, but you had a cap on the bill. And Madam Chair and members, again relating to the Ag Committee, I'm not certain we want to put the language under Section J in there, because money's tight around here. And money's certainly been tight to agriculture, and we've been seeing our share of cuts in the agricultural side. And there are things that we want to look at. Representative Hornstein brought up some points on biomass. There's things we want to look at as that. And Representative Earhart brought up about the idea of corn and ethanol. And I would point out that corn is not the only feedstock for ethanol. There are lots of feedstocks for it. We're looking at ways to make renewable fuels cheaper, better, and better for the environment. And I would hope we will be able to use some of those funds that have been used to stimulate the ethanol industry in the future, and not tie them up in all of this.
And Representative Mavis, I think from my perspective on this is that certainly we were willing to give the industry a jump start with some money. We're now asking the distribution system in this state to try and help us with getting use of E85. One of the problems, as you so succinctly stated earlier, was that we don't have enough pumps, especially in greater Minnesota. And quite frankly, we know that this fuel does have less output. It may be a little bit cheaper, but in many people's mind, it's at minimum a wash. And the cost of the additional cost of putting these pumps, the businesses aren't going to absorb that. They're going to put that on to the consumers.
Madam Chair, I served over 20 years on Petroleum Cooperative's Board of Directors, and I know a little about tanks and pumps and all of this stuff, and petroleum funds and cleanup funds and all of that. And just for example, one of the testifiers this morning said there's approximately about 4,000 stations in the state. And my understanding was verified by the testifier that over 70% of those are what you would call the large franchise companies, and their agreement, and typically a fairly long-term agreement with the franchisee, is that you have three grades of gasoline at your pump. You have petroleum, premium, mid-grade, and the cheap stuff. And that's part of the agreement. You have to do it. I'm not suggesting, and I don't think Chairman Davids was either in his proposal this morning, that if we put new tanks and new pumps in, what I'm suggesting is we deal with the small group of major franchisers in the state that control over 70% of the petroleum stations in the state. Sit down and talk to them and see what it would take to have, for example, out of one of their 12 pumps, to just change the label on the dispenser to say E85 and just pump E85 in that tank. That doesn't cost you a lot of money, in my experience of over 20 years. So I would like to see us do that, and I don't want to burden the industry also with adding more tanks and all of this. So.
All right. Thank you, Chair Davis. Did you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple points as to what's going on over in the Ag Committee. We had an Erdahl bill that used some of these funds for some different things. There'd be biomass, and there's quite a few different areas there, and that passed out, and it's an Ag Finance. Now, there's a Heidgerken bill that's going to be heard either next week or the next week. That's working on spending this money. We got a lot of folks who want their hands on these tails or want their hands on the money that's going offline. The bill I had today was $500,000 from the general fund. We didn't go after, just to clear that up, we didn't go after the money that's falling off from the producer payments. So, but I understand the concept of five to five you die. So the only concern I have about this is what it's going to do to a fiscal note. We've been able to keep the fiscal note at zero or very little. This puts it, and I don't know how far out, how many years they count on the fiscal note, but I am somewhat concerned about that, but that might be a discussion for another day.
And Representative Davis, one of the purposes is to hold this over to get a fiscal note once we get the amendment set up, and we'll know more about that. And so is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak in favor of the A16 amendment? Anybody that would like to speak in opposition to the A16 amendment? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't get, Madam Chair, who sponsored the amendment.
That's my amendment.
Oh.
Any additional questions?
Madam Chair, what is your plan here to lay this over?
I'm hoping that we get through the amendments before this committee is over, and then we will ask for a fiscal note on the bill as amended and take this back up on Tuesday.
But do you mean now, Madam Chair, to add this on or to put this on?
The motion before us right now is to adopt the A16 amendment.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, what about the local fiscal statement or whatever they call those things now?
I'm sorry, I'm not clear about your question.
Or doesn't this have any local fiscal impact?
Representative Earhart, the local fiscal, you want a local fiscal note on this? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Does it, you're talking about individual gas pumps or something here. Are we not? Or are we not?
I'm not sure what you're asking. By Tuesday, we should at least have some preliminary numbers on its effect on the state budget. And that's what we're most concerned with at this time. But this bill is going to take a couple more twists and turns. My understanding it has to go to Ways and Means as well. So, Representative Hausman.
Just to follow up on Representative Earhart's question, I mean, the fiscal note would tell us both state and local.
No.
Fiscal, no?
Madam Chair.
Chair Abrams.
Madam Chair, there is a provision in state law that allows the chair of the tax committee and the ranking minority member on the tax committee to ask for a local fiscal impact note on local units of government if it is anticipated that the impact would be greater than $5 million. I don't think, Representative Davids, that this bill is a candidate for a local fiscal impact note, but Representative Prinke is a very creative person, and maybe he'll think of some argument to ask for one, but I really can't, Representative Davids.
Just follow up to that then. I mean, an amendment like this, if you're doing a fiscal note for the bill, I mean, by then we've added it. If this were a separate bill, we would know that fiscal impact of what we're voting for before we would have to add it to the bill. That's the dilemma.
Mr. Hausman, once we get a fiscal note on the bill as amended, we will know what portions of the bill are causing additional expenditures. We'll be able to go from there and see if we want to take them. Right now I am working with a bill which has questionable ability to be passed out of this committee, and trying to work a number of concerns that have been brought forward relative to this measure. And this is one of the ideas that might help mitigate some of the concerns about the bill as it was introduced. Any additional questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Oh.
Motion's adopted. The next amendment that we will work with is the A19 amendment, and this is Representative Anderson's amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, A19 amendment was brought to me by the industry. Sandy Noonan had testified before. She mentioned that she wanted to speak to this amendment, so members would like to have Ms. Noonan address the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A19 amendment attempts to accomplish two things. Number one, at the bottom of page one, starting on line 23, we have expounded on the language that's currently in the bill that mandates that the U.S. EPA give approval to E20 glass before it can be sold by listing a number of express determinations that we're going to ask them to make. And these are all currently in their regs, so we're not doing anything terrifically unique here. But we want to make sure they issue an express determination, look at these issues, and hopefully their failure to act won't end up being a waiver of this of the E20 gas. So that's one thing that this amendment does. The second thing that it does starts on page 1, line 9 of the amendment, and what we are respectfully requesting the author to consider here is giving us some adequate time to make sure this will work for manufacturers. It's our understanding that the request for the waiver will probably be made sometime very soon in the future, in the next year or two, and we're saying give us either 10 years once the EPA approves this so that we can retool every manufacturing plant if the manufacturers want can do that, and then or once 60% of new model vehicles offered for sale in Minnesota are warranted for fuel with 20%, then it would also kick in 60 days after that, whichever comes first. So theoretically, under the language of this amendment that we're proposing, the mandate actually may kick in many, many years before the date that's currently in Representative David's bill of 2015, if car manufacturers, for competitive and marketing reasons, decide to do this a lot sooner than they presently are. So those are the two things that this amendment proposes to do.
Representative David's.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Anderson Amendment, I would respectfully oppose it for several reasons. One reason, on page 3 of the bill, line 23, it says obtaining federal approval for the use of E20 as a gasoline, and it's already in the regs what they have to do, so we're telling them by this amendment to do what they have to do. Point number one. Point number two, failure to act. If there's a failure to act to get E20 approved, this bill doesn't kick in and doesn't go into effect anyways. And the third point is to give them 10 years to retool. They're not going to retool every plant from Minnesota. What's going to happen is the EPA will most likely find that E20 is acceptable, and I envision, and I can't guarantee this, but GM is already talking about warranting E20, and I think Ford would have to follow, and Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler, and the others. So I think we're asking, by this amendment, to tell the EPA to do what we already are telling them that they have to do.
Thank you.
So I would respectfully oppose it.
Ms. Aaron, did you have any respect?
Madam Chair, committee members, the language, I think, on the effective date does give an either-or option. If Representative Davis is correct and GM starts warranting it and then Ford follows suit, this mandate will kick in possibly within a couple of years. Then the market, the free market, will have taken care of this, which is always our first choice of a way to do this. But if for some reason they don't, we are asking manufacturers to retool many, many models that are sold here in Minnesota. It currently takes about 4 years to bring one new model car to market, design, testing, and everything that they put it through. Now we're asking them to retool for every car that they sell in Minnesota. So we don't think it's unreasonable to give us 10 years to do that. But Representative Davis may be absolutely correct that the market will take care of this. And if it does, that's why we put the language in here that says if the free market does take care of it, your mandate can go into effect right away, and you don't have to wait till 2015. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Anybody in the audience like to speak in favor of the amendment? Anybody in opposition to the amendment? Representative Anderson renews his motion on the A-19 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion is adopted. Yes. All right, the next amendment that we're going to consider is the A-14 amendment. I'll wait a moment until it's passed out.
Madam Chair.
President David.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. To this amendment, I have no objection to this at all.
That's it, right?
A-14 amendment.
We need some numbers, Madam Chair.
Yeah, what's the current Okay. The next item will be A14, and the purpose of this is to mandate certain performance measures on the state vehicles. We had testimony today that they're doing a pretty good job in purchasing the vehicles, but not so good at purchasing the fuel. And so in order to fill in some percentages on that, on line 15, you'd add the number 25. On line 17,
32.5. 24.
And on line 30, 24. And I'm sorry, line 24, add 50. And page 2, line 1, add 75.
Oh, this is for the state.
Okay. So I'll certainly have an executive order by the governor. This would put in statute certain standards that the state agencies would have to achieve by those states. Are there any questions? Does anybody like to speak in favor of the amendment? Does anybody like to speak in opposition to the amendment? All right. All those in favor of the A14 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. A14 amendment is adopted.
Okay.
The next amendment is the A15 amendment, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the A15 amendment is being brought to us by the OPI, the Outdoor Power Institute. Mr. McNew, James would like to speak to the bill and testify in regards to the reason for the concern. And he had mentioned in his testimony that he had some wanted to see the bill amended to address the issue that the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute had. So if Mr. McNew could come forward just to speak to the amendment and let you members know what their concerns are and why they want to bring it forward. Appreciate that.
Mr. McNew.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, as we have expressed our concerns on the E20 mandate, we just want to make sure that the citizens of Minnesota are given the due diligence to look at the effects of this bill on the products in which they will have in their hands. The first portion of it, of course, is to look at how it will affect the operation from a operational standpoint. The second point of this, beginning on line 15, is to look at the safety implications, asking the CPSC to give us an advisory on that, looking at information that is listed from national experts and stakeholders. On line G, we're asking that the Environmental Protection Agency be solicited for information from national experts and stakeholders on whether E20 or its combustion products could adversely affect the impact of emission-related performance, such as increase in evaporation emissions or exhaust emissions in certain areas. And those are basically the three elements that we are looking to have looked at by this amendment.
All right, thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. 2 points before I'd like to bring up Assistant or Deputy Commissioner Holston, because this would make the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources do some things that they don't do. And furthermore, if this amendment was on, I'd really appreciate if the committee would not put this amendment on. If this amendment goes on, then I have to go back to Representative Hackbarth once it's back in environment policy, and he's a great guy, it's a great committee, but there's no reason to do that to me. I'm very sensitive, you know.
We know that. Assistant Commissioner Holstein Stoner.
Assistant or deputy, something.
I think we'll find out.
Long-time executioner.
Welcome to the committee.
Who was hiding behind the pole for a while?
Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to testify on the
A16. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Mark Holston, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. This isn't the type of study that we're in the business of doing. We're not... We're a natural resource-based agency. This is more of a product line study. And quite frankly, even if it was something we would do, this would not be a priority for us, being that there is already the non-oxygenated exemption in place in Minnesota and the ability to get those types of fuels. We would not be prioritizing these dollars to be used for this type of study.
All right, thank you. Just a minute. Representative Anderson, would you consider giving a testimony deleting paragraph E from your amendment?
Madam Chair, that has, yes.
Would you consider that a friendly amendment to your amendment?
Yes.
All right. Members, I think we will delete paragraph E given the testimony of one of our fine former members. And with that, Representative Hausman, did you have a question?
Oh, I was just going to ask the Commissioner if he had a point of view about a 20% mandate of ethanol.
I think he's left this stand. Representative Earhart.
No, running down.
I don't know if the Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner knows anything about ethanol, but there's a fine study in here telling how a 15-horsepower Mercury marine outboard engine fell apart when it was using these kind of things, and I know that he's familiar with outboard motors. So if he wants to use this in his outboard motor and he doesn't care, I don't either.
Thank you for that comment. Any additional questions or comments on the A15 amendment as amended?
Madam Chair.
Sure, David.
I still oppose this. It still has language in the United States Environmental Protection Agency, so still, Hackbarth, I'm sure, is going to still want this thing. Just please vote this one down.
All right. Any additional comments?
Madam Chair, if Mr. I could, please. These things are very important to small off-road equipment manufacturers as well as the users of this type of product. Basically, without a comprehensive evaluation of how E20 will affect this product, we can see issues with high temperatures, which in the Forestry Service I'm certain would be a concern to the natural resources, where they actually now would exceed the legal limits for exhaust gas temperatures, thus creating opportunities for forest fires and ground fires. With the second portion of this amendment with the Environmental Protection Agency, it is very obvious that the increased oxygen will increase idle RPMs, which will cause blade engagement, chainsaw chain engagement, things like that, which are very important to the users of chainsaws, bladed products such as brush cutters in the field, both professional users, but the most concern to me is those that are in the hands of consumers, which are not professional users.
Thank you. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In looking at page 3 of the bill, it talks about, on line 14, small engine manufacturers and am I incorrect here, but it seems to me that it does address the issue of small engines.
Mr. McNeil. Or Representative Davis.
Well, I believe that the federal government's not going to approve E20 as a fuel if it's going to engage engines improperly and burn the forest down and change Western civilization as we know it. This will be in the study, and it's totally unnecessary.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
I'm giving the time up. Representative Magna.
No, that's okay. I'm trying to get this clarified. In the bill, in Senate File 4 on page 2, it says the takes effect on January 1, 2015, and goes on. But is that the date of the mandate? Assuming that that we don't get to a 20% level by increasing E85 demand and others, is that the date that a mandate would kick in the state of Minnesota?
Chair Davis.
If we do not meet the 20% mandate for 20% ethanol use, by December 31st of 2010, then that would be the date of the mandate.
Okay. And Madam Chair, in the amendment here on page 2, you're asking the governor to submit a request to the Consumer Protection Agency, the EPA, by December 31 of 05 here. And then the tricky point to me comes in on lines 14 and beyond, where it says it expires by end of 2008. If the EPA is not issued an affirmative determination on E20, and our mandate doesn't kick in for some time after that. Madam Chair, again, my experience in renewable fuels and studies with the U.S. government, they take a long, long time. And I'm worried about that provision in there that you're asking them to come back with an affirmative report by 2008, and I don't, for that clause in there, I would not support the amendment, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, in regards to those concerns on those dates, I was willing to amend those dates to match the dates within the bill itself. To make it more acceptable to the members of the committee.
Representative Anderson, if you'd like to give us the page, line, and number, we would appreciate that.
Members, page 2, line 3, said that this subdivision expiring on December 31st, 2008, would be December 31st, 2010. And on line, page 2, line 15, 2008 to 2010. And I believe, looks like that would be it.
And would you like to incorporate those changes into your amendment?
If I could, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. Any additional questions or comments? All those in favor of the A15 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion is adopted. We have one final amendment, and I believe it belongs to Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is an amendment that would designed to promote Minnesota-grown renewable biomass for additional plants, and say that we're not going to go forward with coal. The concerns I raised earlier. We currently don't have any coal plants operating to produce ethanol, and considering that ethanol is renewable, I want to make sure that we power these plants with renewable energy. So it's very straightforward, and I'd ask for your support.
Chair David.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and to the amendment before us, I would speak respectfully against it. I'm not doing very well today, but my reason being, I'm all for renewables, and let's get those going. I want to work with the author on those issues. But this hits one that's right in the middle of, or towards the tail end of the permitting process, and to pull the rug out from these folks, if the numbers are there and they're for real, and it works, I just don't think it's appropriate to pull out the rug from Heron Lake and add $6 million more to their take away from their bottom line when we don't know how this process, the numbers are being studied by the MPCA right now. I think we need to let them do their work, and this one is a little bit ahead of its time, I think, the amendment. So I respectfully speak against it.
All right. Representative Hornstein?
Well, thank you, Representative David, Madam Chair, Representative Davids. Again, we are. This could signal, I think, the beginning of a major trend and a trend away from what I think will be beneficial to the industry and the environment and renewables. If this bill passes, we will see quite possibly and probably a major expansion of the ethanol industry in the state of Minnesota. And so with that, we will probably see significant numbers of new plants coming online. And I think to add more mercury and greenhouse gases to the environment, no matter what the technology, and this is the technology being used in Heron Lake, it's a traditional coal technology. And so to move forward with this bill, we will be having more production, more plants, and we need to be consistent if we want this to be really a clean, forward-looking fuel source. We need to have a clean, forward-looking fuel source in its production.
Representative Hellison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, I just think about the coalition of members who have put the votes together for ethanol in the past and how important it is to think about that coalition. I know a lot of people in my office ask me to step away from the atrazine thing and say, let's deal with that separately. But this is kind of directly, this is a little more directly related to the issue because it's one particular plant that we hope wouldn't be a trend. And I wonder if we couldn't have a bit of a compromise here from the author and the industry and say, given the fact that a huge number of the votes historically have come from the group of members who would have an issue around this.
Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hausman. To one of Representative Hornstein's points, I believe you mentioned conventional coal technology. I think if you're looking at this further, it's not conventional coal technology. It's the latest, quite advanced. And I really, you know, this is a process, and we'll go further with the process here, hopefully. But I don't think it would be appropriate when this is before the MPCA at this time, and there will be a ruling, I believe in April sometime, that we just say you can't do it. That they're meeting all the requirements that they've been asked to, and I think we need to let them do their job.
Representative Hornstein, this bill is going to come back on Tuesday. I don't think there's a big fiscal impact in where you're trying to go with your policy. Would you be willing to lay your amendment on the table and between now and Tuesday work with the bill author to see if there are some language short of an all-out ban that may begin to address some of your concerns relative to the production end of this in the interest of time and moving forward with the author?
Madam Chair, that's an excellent suggestion. I'd be happy to lay this on the table.
All right, thank you.
And Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Hornsey. What I'd like to do is try and set up a meeting with the Heron Lake folks, bring them in Monday or before committee on Tuesday so they could brief you on just what they're trying to do, and then we can have the debate on Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
And
I'd be happy to talk with you further.
And with that, I will lay Senate File 4 on the table. And my apologies to the committee members, members of the audience, for going over. I'm sorry that we've done that today. But we'll take this bill up again on Tuesday. We will not be meeting next Thursday because of the Passover, Easter, spring break that we have at the end of next week. I'm sorry.
Another Passover.
So that's a...